Here are the stories we're covering this week in the Category 5.TV newsroom. Is Amazon planning to track its employees? A patent has been granted for an ultrasonic wristband that can monitor a worker's every move. Data on soldiers' running patterns captured by fitness app Strava has been discovered to detail the secret whereabouts of military bases. Best Buy has informed music companies that it will stop selling CDs this July. YouTube is developing new policies to protect itself from the fallout caused by creators that are posting inappropriate content. These stories are coming right up. Don't go anywhere.
Whether you shop on ThinkGeek, GearBest, B&H Photo Video, eBay, or Amazon, or even if you want a free trial of Audible, you'll find the best deals and support the shows we produce by simply visiting the shopping sites you already frequent by using the links on our website. Visit category5.tv/partners for the full and ever-growing list and help us create more free content like this show. Thank you for shopping with our partners, and thank you for watching.
This is the Category5.tv newsroom, covering the week's top tech stories with a slight Linux bias.
I'm Becca Ferguson, filling in for Sasha Rickman this week. And here are the top stories we're following this week. Amazon, it seems, wants to keep a close eye on its employees. The firm's latest patent suggests it's working on an ultrasonic wristband that can monitor a worker's every move. According to the patent, data about the position of the worker's hands is sent to the company in real time. Amazon describes the technology as a time-saving device, but some have criticized the system for going a step too far in monitoring performance. Thai Ung at The Verge writes, "While the patent describes this tech as a time-saving system, tracking workers in this way seems dystopian." The Amazon patent was published by the United States Patent Office. It describes ultrasonic tracking of a worker's hands that would be used to monitor performance of assigned tasks. Diagrams show how workers will wear bracelets on either hand, which contain ultrasonic units. The ultrasonic unit is configured to be worn by a user in proximity to the user's hand and to periodically emit ultrasonic sound pulses, states the patent. These silent pulses would then be picked up by ultrasonic transducers placed around the warehouse. The patent also outlines a feedback system, which means the device will vibrate to point the wearer's hand in the right direction. The patent further states, "The management module monitors the performance of an assigned task." Amazon sees the bracelets being used by workers not only in its warehouse, but also outdoors and on cargo ships. The patent includes this tongue-twisting statement. "Existing approaches for keeping track of where inventory items are stored may require the inventory system worker to perform time-consuming acts beyond placing the inventory item into an inventory bin and retrieving the inventory item from the inventory bin, such as pushing a button associated with the inventory bin or scanning a barcode associated with the inventory bin. Accordingly, approved approaches for keeping track of where an inventory item is stored are of interest." The company insists that this is a labor-saving measure intended to verify that correct items are being processed and to avoid the need for computationally intensive and expensive monitoring. It is not clear, however, if the designs will ever actually materialize. Amazon has declined to comment on the patent.
Way to go, first of all. What a tongue twister indeed.
Yes, and long-winded. Mm-hmm. Kind of a run-on sentence.
It kind of, you know, I think about the fear of being chipped and how companies in San Francisco have, you know, pursued chipping employees and other places in the world as well, and how that's a big concern to mm-hmm. employees and human rights and things like that, and conspiracy theorists as well.
Yes, yes. So I was thinking of, there was an episode of Undercover Boss we watched together once, and he went to the shipping warehouse of his company. I can't remember what his company was, but he was undercover as a new employee, and he was being trained how to build boxes right. and package items, so he had to make the right size box, put the item in, get the address label slapped
on. And it was immense.
Yeah, and there was a certain quota. You had to have a certain amount of boxes packed right. within every 30 minutes, and he's scrambling, trying to get these boxes made, trying to fill them, trying to get the address on. He was getting more and more stressed, and the person yep. who's training him she was getting stressed because she was just like, you're not going fast enough. You're going to get fired.
Wow.
So I was thinking if you had bracelets on tracking how fast you were going, you would just be so stressed out the whole time because you knew they were seeing exactly how fast you were packing the boxes. And I don't know, it just seems like it would be a very stressful working environment because you can never just pause a moment and take a
right.
breath.
There's two sides to it. I didn't really think of it that way. But so obviously, if Big Brother Amazon, my boss, is watching my hand movements using these ultrasonic devices, then it's like they're spying on what I'm doing. But the big run-on sentence that you had about the inventory bins made sense in that, well, I deal with a little bit of inventory and sometimes things get misplaced and you don't really know where they've gone. And then finally you find them and, well, you've missed the sale. So the one perspective that I gleaned from that is that because of this, they'll know where that product got placed.
Yeah.
Always. And yeah. in a warehouse like Amazon, I can't imagine how massive the inventory is.
Yeah, I kind of, if you've ever seen the Canadian show Warehouse 13, where the warehouse looks like it's miles
right,
long
yeah.
inside.
That's what Amazon is to Becca.
if you couldn't find the item, if you could just be sort of like, okay, lead the way.
Ah, yes.
That end of things might be
It might actually
helpful,
be...
if not cartoonish, but
it,
helpful.
That would explain how they see it as a productivity thing.
Yeah, for sure. You're not going to be wasting time looking in all the wrong aisles for a box. Take you straight to it. So that side of things could for sure be more efficient, I think.
What do you think? Comment below. Let us know.
The hidden locations of secret U.S. military bases, patrols, and forward operating bases have been accidentally revealed by the fitness app Strava. Nathan Russer, founding member of the Institute for United Conflict Analysts, initially revealed the information on Twitter, noting that data from Strava's heat map makes the U.S. bases clearly identifiable and mappable. In subsequent tweets, Ruser was able to identify a Russian operating area in Maimim and guard patrol, a Turkish patrol, Afghanistan FOBs, and a soldier running routes.
Wow.
The revelation shows some of the dangers inherent with the growth of the Internet of Things and unrestrained shadow IT. Strava users are automatically opted in to sharing their data anonymously on the heat map and must manually opt out if they wish to not share that data. The version of Strava's heat map that was used in Ruser's analysis was released in November. According to a Strava blog post, it takes into account data from 1 billion activities and 3 trillion latitude-longitude points, 10 TB of data in total. Strava's privacy policy notes that the data is anonymized, but that doesn't actually make it unusable for hackers, cyber attackers, or in this case, possible military threats. This information should serve as a wake-up call to security and IT professionals alike that even seemingly harmless apps such as a fitness tracker can prove dangerous to your organization. Enterprises need an IoT policy, and it must account for all devices used in connection with the company, not just the ones handling sensitive data.
Wow, that's scary. Oh, boy. We need to take a look at this.
Mm-hmm.
Here we've got a building of some sort. And just to demonstrate what we're talking about, somebody has been running around in a circle here. And, you know, you can see the floor plan of the building itself, and you can basically make out what it looks like.
Mm-hmm.
And that's all because of the heat map.
Mm-hmm.
And as I mentioned there, it looks like they've clued into this news story and taken it seriously and removed some of the stuff that should have been hidden in the first place,
mm-hmm.
which is good.
What exactly is shadow IT?
Shadow IT, so in this case, the term is being used because your wristband, this Strava device, is something that is not necessarily approved by the organization. So it's an internet-connected device that my boss has not approved me to use on the network.
Mm-hmm.
So shadow IT is like IT infrastructure that exists within a corporation or a company or an organization that is not endorsed by and approved by the policies in place by that organization. So, for example, in a military base, you would have a very specific type of phone. it would be approved and it would have a very specific set of applications installed on it by the organization. Mm-hmm. And you're not allowed to bring your own personal phone. Yeah. It's going to be that one. Mm-hmm. So Shadow IT, on the other hand, is stuff that is not, it has not gone through that approval process. And it's that wristband that's monitoring your tracking your, right, your movements. And sometimes Shadow IT is a very good thing. Think about Google. Mm-hmm. A lot of innovations come out of Google because they specifically set aside time and say to their employees, okay, you've got time to work on your own side projects. Mm-hmm. Those projects in and of themselves are technically Shadow IT. They're creating infrastructures and creating projects that are not really approved by the blanket organization, the company that, that runs it, mm-hmm. And it's happening internally, but is not approved by, other than just the blanket, go ahead and do it. Mm-hmm. But then innovation says, okay, now somebody's created something awesome. Now it becomes part of the in, the actual IT infrastructure of the company. Mm-hmm. So it's not always a bad thing.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And in the case of Strava, were users not aware that they need to opt out if they don't want their data shared? Is are they assuming that the anonymity is the same thing?
That's it. We think, oh, it's anonymous, so it's safe.
Yeah.
You don't necessarily clue into the fact that anonymous is not necessarily safe. Mm-hmm. You may be tracking my data anonymously, but it is still drawing an outline of a military base. Yeah. So I think it's more of a, just a case of, hey, it's in semantics, mm-hmm. where we've just made a mistake, and maybe it needs to be. I don't know how you resolve something like that.
Well, maybe just more awareness, raising awareness.
Awareness within the staff, maybe.
Yeah, within the staff.
You're always going to have somebody that just doesn't follow policy.
Yeah.
And they're still going to have that device.
Of course.
Because they're thinking, I'm not losing steps, mm-hmm. right? Maybe there should be an anonymizer.
But if they knew that they could opt out.
But if you opt out, do you lose your steps? Do you lose, because it's competitive? So if I'm jogging, I'm getting steps.
But if you lost your steps, what would be the point of the fitness app?
The fitness app is meant to promote friendly competition between other users.
There'd be no point to opt out because that would defeat the purpose.
You'd lose that competitive nature of the app itself. Mm-hmm. So I think there's that too.
Yeah.
Sasha's always bragging about her steps.
Yeah.
And I look at my phone and I'm like, oh. It's just how it is around here, you know?
The end of the CD format might be in sight as two major retailers are set to push for change in their relationship with the industry through the end of this year. According to Consequence of Sound, 89 million CDs were purchased in all of 2017, paling greatly in comparison to the 800 million sold in 2001. The drop in popularity for the format has already caused a shift in how each store carries inventory, with Target, for example, only handling a limited selection now, compared to nearly 800 titles at its height, according to Billboard. Best Buy, on the other hand, is going to get rid of CDs altogether by July. Sources are suggesting that the company's CD business is nowadays only generating about $40 million annually. While it says it's planning to pull out CDs, Best Buy will continue to carry vinyl for the next 2 years. However, keeping a commitment it made to vendors, the vinyl will be merchandise with the turntables from now on. Target is taking a different route. Instead of getting rid of music, they are pushing to change the payment structure for both CDs and DVDs from the movie distributors. The store has told music companies that they would like to switch to a consignment arrangement. With consignment, the inventory risk will shift back to the labels themselves. Any pushback on these new deals and sales terms could hasten the demise of CDs. They also note that music companies are keeping a watchful eye on what happens with DVD sales as well, before making any final decisions. Okay, YouTube says it's developing new policies to deal with video makers who damage the reputation of the website. Chief Executive Susan Wojcicki. That's a hard one.
I love it. Wojcicki. We'll call her that. Wojcicki.
Yep.
Yeah.
Said egregious behavior by video bloggers caused significant harm to the entire community of video makers. The site has been under close scrutiny after video blogger Logan Paul made a video which showed a dead body in a so-called suicide forest. But many video makers are frustrated with YouTube's policies. In a bid to stop advertisements appearing next to controversial content, YouTube has been using algorithms to identify content that it judges not to be advertiser-friendly. Yet many of the platform's biggest stars have complained that their videos have nevertheless been incorrectly marked as unsuitable for advertising. YouTube creators have coined the words demonetization and adpocalypse to describe this problem. The platform has also been criticized for what video makers perceive as a lack of transparency about its policies. In a blog post, Mrs. Wojcicki said that she wanted to strengthen the trust that our community places in YouTube through open and frequent communication. Addressing the so-called adpocalypse, she said the company was working on a more accurate solution that would involve an increase in human moderators to review videos. We're also currently developing policies that would lead to consequences if a creator does something egregious that causes significant harm to our community as a whole, she added. When Logan Paul uploaded the video he recorded in the Suicide Forest, YouTube retaliated by removing him from the Google Preferred program, which sells premium advertising for the website's top 5% of video makers.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, this is a big problem for YouTube creators because even us, like, we're pretty benign here. We don't get into political debates. We don't get into that kind of stuff. At least we try very hard to avoid it, to be very neutral. But last week's episode, we were talking about open banking with our interviewee. We were talking about various topics like I had talked about net neutrality. And sure, some of them are, you know, maybe it's on the fence, but several of our videos got flagged as non-monetizable, is what I'm getting at. So even as benign as our statements here on the show are, we're dealing with it. And we're having to... I had 3 videos last week where I had to request a manual review by a YouTube staff. And it's work for me, and it's extra work for the creator, and and you've got to catch it. Because if I ever missed that they have flagged one of my videos... And each video costs me money to make. So if I ever missed it and then they pull all the monetization from that video, I could lose a lot of money that is meant to reimburse the cost of creation and pay the rent and help with the bills. So it's a bad situation. So yeah, they absolutely need to improve things for sure.
Now, does YouTube have contracts though? Did Logan Paul know that it was not appropriate to post a video with a dead body?
Well, I think that as a human being, it should be ingrained into our souls, our spirits, that is not appropriate.
Yeah.
In any case.
Now, there is a lot. There are things like that on YouTube, but is it just that those videos have been demonetized? So they're allowed to put graphic content because they're not making money?
Or is it more that... Maybe they don't get caught because they're not making money.
Or because they're not big enough to be noticed?
That's true, too. Yeah. And so there has been a change there, too, because if they're not big enough, they simply demonetized the channel. So MangleFox70 has been demonetized. New Every Day has been demonetized because we just don't have enough subscribers on those channels. And so now we're losing money because YouTube has put this into place. Thank you, Mr. Logan Paul, for making them have to make this change.
No, but with Logan Paul, It was said that these are in violation of YouTube policies.
Sure. So we accept
it. So that means YouTube does have a policy of no dead bodies in this case. I'm assuming.
Because I don't know that it's that specific.
So if they're saying it's in violation of policy, where is the policy that said no dead bodies allowed?
Well,
and did Logan Paul, should they have YouTubers sign a contract or in some way acknowledge that they have read the policies and know exactly what they are?
I'm not sure specifically what policies they're referring to, but I know that there are 2 policies that I can think of immediately that would apply to him. First of all, when you sign up for a YouTube, like an account to create, to become a creator, you have accepted their terms of use. So you're more than 13 years old, you accept this, and it's a big long document. Then, if you are going to become a YouTube partner, that is a monetizable partner with, they call them partners. So we're a partner with YouTube, and so we're able to monetize the videos. So when you see the ads at the bottom of our YouTube channel, that helps to pay for our bills. Mm-hmm. That's through our YouTube partnership. So we have accepted yet another contract with them mm-hmm. with regards to our partnership. And that one is very specific that you will not create content that is of a controversial nature yeah. that is, you know, and to really summarize, or it can't be anything that an advertiser is going to find offensive mm-hmm. or because it's so they're paying to advertise.
He knew better, or he should
he should have known better had he read and the contract that he clicked yes on.
So it, to me, it seems that it was YouTube had every right to
absolutely
remove him from the
absolutely
Google program.
But now it's hurting a lot of little guys. So he's a big guy.
But how directly does it hurt the little guys? What's the
I can only use myself as an example.
Like, how can we blame Logan Paul?
Well, it's easy to blame him because that's what made...
Because the little guys aren't posting dead bodies.
No.
Just to use that
example. What he did made YouTube realize we need to make changes now. And so now, part of that, as you said, are they too little to get noticed? So now they've just cut off all the little guys. So all of the small channels...
To save them having to monitor little guy the monetization. Because if they're wanting to use more human moderators, they don't want to be wasting that on little channels.
Where previously you could post a video like that takes you time and possibly money to create, and you might have a couple thousand views, and you might get $20 back.
Yeah.
And that helps to encourage you to grow and to become better and to do more. Now they're saying, no money for you.
So how many subscribers do you... What's the threshold before you can start making...
1,000 now.
1,000 subscribers?
1,000 subscribers.
I suppose in some ways it's an incentive for the little guys get to promote their channel and get their mm-hmm. subscribers up there.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely, yeah. For sure. I don't disagree with the choice. I just it does hurt a lot of people, and I think that they need to fix the system. The fact that our videos get demonetized all the time now... I would hate to be somebody who was a little more controversial than we are. And, you know, there are news channels that make their living off of broadcasting the news. And the news is controversial.
But is that included in their policies?
They get demonetized.
I know that that's news why channels, they have to show censored video footage and things like
sure.
that.
Sure. Mm-hmm.
So I'm sure there's a difference between what you're allowed to talk about versus what you're allowed to show.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, but YouTube and Google use speech to text, and then they run that through the filters. And this person said this, and this, and so now it's flagged, and you cannot monetize that video mm-hmm. based on a robotic algorithm.
Yeah,
and so that is where it's hurting people because it's not very accurate.
I see. Mm-hmm.
Again, we welcome your comments below. If you're a YouTube creator, it would be a good opportunity for you to share as well.
Yeah,
how has it affected you?
Big thanks to Phil Priest, Roy W. Nash, and our community of viewers for submitting stories to us this week. Thanks for watching the Category5.tv newsroom. Don't forget to like and subscribe for all your tech news with a slight Linux bias. And for more free content, be sure to check out our website. From the Category5.tv newsroom, I'm Becca Ferguson.